Let's talk about the great composer, American composer, George Gershwin. To put him in time framing, he just was born 99 years ago, two years before the end of the century. So he didn't compose much between the ages 0 and 2, so we can consider him a 20th century composer. Now, he exerted a tremendous influence with fabulous output in so many different areas. He's one of my great heroes of American music. And this was primarily in the years around and after World War I. Because there were several significant and widespread new influences in music to be felt here in this country. Composers all over the world turned their attention to traditional folk songs of their native countries and worked the characteristics from the folk music elements into their original compositions. This is what Gershwin in large part did here in this country. In the USA, where folk music traditions were relatively recent, some composers also drew on the important native jazz traditions. And this was done by many composers, and specifically and very widely acknowledged by George Gershwin. We must consider that there was a very important social and even political element in this. It aimed at bringing music out of the drawing room, which was primarily the European way of playing and listening to music. The salon, the concert hall, and bringing it into a wider realm and giving it both meaning to and contact with a broader and perhaps less sophisticated public than was to be found in the traditional music making places. That is a very important point. This was an emerging democracy, although the word probably word comes from old Greece, but it was not applied to American politics, but it was surely on the way to create what we know now as the United States of America. And this elitist, the playing of music, the listening to music, to get involved with music was in Europe primarily reserved to the affluent, wealthy, and well-educated public. We have, and this gives great joy to me, a development of music, American music, from the roots up. It is not anymore reserved for the rich. I was thinking about playing at least an excerpt of Gershwin's probably best-known work, which is Rhapsody in Blue, but since you all know it, it would just remind you without a CD player, I will either have to sing or whistle it.
Oh, great, you have it. It's been delivered.
Great. But nevertheless, I would like to introduce you to two or perhaps three lesser works or lesser known works to show you. You see, this is something that is bugging me immensely, that when there is a great American composer, the general public usually is familiar with the most important works, and Gershwin is synonymous with Rhapsody in Blue. Rhapsody in Blue is synonymous with Gershwin. And when somebody asks, what else did he write? Well, some people will scratch their head and come up with names. I will not mention them because you will know one. But have you heard it in its entirety, seen it on stage or whatever? No. All we know is Rhapsody in Blue. This I would like to unbalance a little bit, and this is why I will play a lesser known work. I do want, however, to mention something on Rapson and Blue. Why, and I want you to think about that, why has it had this tremendous success? And again, in all the layers of population. And what was its influence into the upon the population in general, in music-loving public? Rhapsody in Blue, better than any so-called, and I use the quotation mark, classical works in American music, embodies the dance-driven vitality of the jazz age. Dance-driven. That is important. And the giddy optimism that powered the Roaring Twenties to such dizzying heights. I wish I had time to play this work, but we are too short on time. I will delight you with two, or perhaps three, depending on how you like to do it. Shorter works by him. The first one is Gershwin had its dramatic and serious side of music, but he was also fun-loving. He wrote a beautiful little piece which he called Promenade, in parentheses, Walking the Dog. And this is played by one of the greatest also American clarinetists, Richard Stolzman, like six. I don't know whether we have a flashlight, but let's see what we can do. He may have forgotten. There's one. Yes, one. Thank you.
Well,
you missed that. Use your imagination when a piece of music has a specific title. Sometimes I will tell you the title. I didn't yesterday when we played Amy Beach's beautiful piano composition, and I was really pleased and amazed how well my public reacted. It came up with with very appropriate ideas. Of course, you cannot guess what she was trying to convey, but I think it would have destroyed your capacity of listening and the flow of thoughts if I had told you in advance it was Fireflies. But I'm very grateful for all the ideas you came up with. And interestingly enough, I played this before, and the only person in the audiences of maybe, I don't know, 60, 80 people was one young girl who immediately said, "That's Fireflies." She was from the Midwest. Mm-hmm. She used to chase fireflies in the July, August months, and this is it. It couldn't be anything else. So, here we are. This does not work. This is AM. Well, we go to CD. This should help. And think Promenade. Thank you. Sunday afternoon in the big city and somebody's strolling along and that a pooch falling on the leash, running from tree to tree. But we think of it.
It's charming.
It's charming, isn't it? It shows you another facet of the man, Gershwin, of what he... what he's able to write. He is very versatile. Remember, all the composers I've presented so far, I didn't have much chance because of time limitation, but this is one of my intentions to prove to you how rich our heritage of American music is. Think of Stephen Foster. Every song that I grabbed, and he wrote over 200 of them, it presented something very different. Not two were even similar. Different moods, different descriptions, and all of them eminently listenable. Gershwin is like this. Whatever music you listen of him, it is enchanted. Would you, is anyone partial or hostile to clarinet music? Would you like to hear another piece which is not descriptive? It doesn't have a title, it is simply called, what is it called? Let me show, Prelude. Prelude, or Prelude sometimes it's called. It is a kind of an introductory music, but it can stand on itself. So it is just to be listened to, not for content, after I have primed you with this example. This time, just listen for the beauty contained in the music itself. There are three preludes. They are very often played in classical music stations. You may hear them in concert. And this is number two and probably the most often played. Also by Richard Stolzmann.
Yes, number 3, 4, 5. What do you think? Isn't that lovely?
See, there is no cheap sentimentality in it, as we will find in so many other compositions. This is deeply felt, deeply expressed, and to me, it is so American. The clarinet, of course, is the one of the favorite instruments for jazz because of its enormous range, of its variety of timbres that it's capable of expressing, and flexibility. You know what real jazz musicians call a clarinet because of its color. What color is it? The licorice stick. It's deep black, it's made from ebony wood, coming not coincidentally, amazingly, from Africa, where much of the background of this music originates from. Coincidental, but nevertheless significant. Beautiful music. Gershwin, I wanted to contrast these two, played by the same soloist, the same orchestra, and how you can explore so many moods. There is a Gershwin composition for any mood you might want to be in, as it is with Stephen Foster and so many of the other American composers. It is much easier to listen to European music and say, okay, that sounds like Beethoven, that sounds like Edward Elgar, and that sounds like Ravel. Not so in American music. It is not so typified because it covers a much, much broader area, and is one of the wonderful, satisfying experiences to listen to American music. And I'm trying to give you a taste of it through the sampling. Gershwin wrote a lot of not just instrumental but also vocal music, and some of them in form of shows or opera, if you wish, pieces to be played, long, rather lengthy, full-fledged presentations on a stage. And probably his most famous composition in this vein is Orgy and Bess. Yeah. And I have a whole disc of compositions from there, but I will play one for you. Let me see what I can do. This. I only have 2 hands here. I really had a problem putting this program together because if I had time, I would not have played one or two, but half a dozen. And I am like that, insatiable. This is called, should I tell you? Yeah, Summertime.
Oh, thank you. Thank
and this
you.
Is on, this is sung by the eminent, this is, by the great Australian singer Kiri DiCarlo. Oh, and here, again, this is so exciting. We bring all these worldwide elements together in the presentation, and it becomes so beautiful. Again, typical for America, I don't like the word melting pot, but here we have so many nations and from all over the world coming together, and they do something constructive here. So Kiri is a wonderful exponent. If I could remember the track, number 8. Here again, if you know a little bit about the story of Poggi and Bezna, I'm not getting into it because it's only laterally important in my presentation here. But Kiri helps. But any singer that I've heard singing, it goes straight to the heart. You cannot help but I've seen people cry and close to tears. Because of the sheer beauty. Another aspect of Gershwin. But let us go to my next American composer, very American. He is Aaron Copland, and he is so important for American music in a completely different vein from the ones that we have discussed. And I need to tell you a little bit about him and his importance. An aspiring young American composer around 1920. He was born in the year 1900, if you don't remember, and he died just a few years ago, 1990. Aaron Copland found a musical climate with many more options open to him than his earlier colleagues. Things have changed, are changing rapidly. The years following the end of World War I had created new ideas and new attitudes in America, including a new awareness of all things European, including European music. Think pendulum swinging back. We went away from European music, but America was very isolationist, as you know. Very reluctantly, they were drawn into World War I. But the same way as the war in Vietnam brought Asian concepts and Asian ideas and Asian people into this country, the fact that American soldiers had to fight in Europe and got in touch with French and English and eventually German ideas were exposed to German culture. It is a tragic way of doing this. There are better ways, and I hope we never have to resort to these again. But it was important. It was not at all a backlash. It was an enrichment. We did not go back to our sources, but European music had grown up independently. We can even say, had it not been for World War I, these developments would not have happened. I want to imbue in you that notion that music just does not happen. It is in all the other cultural influences. So, American composers went to Europe to study music, which they had done in only limited on a limited scale before that. And they consulted, and here is a very, very important twist and change, a crossroad actually in music. They consulted with modern, anti-romantic composers, because there was the end of the 19th century was so saturated with romanticism that not only people got tired of it, but also the great artists, the poets, the writers, the painters, and the composers, and the public. Now, one of these major anti-romantic composers was a Russian. Anyone familiar? Igor Stravinsky, yes. And a Swiss composer who spent a great part of his life in America, actually on the West Coast. Anyone knows? Ernest Bloch, B-L-O-C-H. Copland managed to combine his love for the new world's dances and songs with the exciting melodic, harmonic, and rhythmic innovations he absorbed from his European acquaintances. Another factor was that Copland traveled extensively across the American continent. Railroads existed and became rapidly the preferred means of transportation. And he also journeyed through time. He wrote two ballets. One is called Rodeo, or Rodeo, as they sometimes prefer to call it in the Southwest, and Billy the Kid. Both of them are Western in setting and include cowboy songs. That was unheard of. Cowboys belonged into the dusty plains, very primitive environment, but not in sophisticated concert halls and the opera like New York or Chicago or Boston. You have to imagine and realize what it means and how changed the American public came to be exposed to something like this. He wrote an opera which is called The Tender Land. It is about farm life in the cornfield and includes a big square dance scene and some country ballads. Again, think about the rather formal and stiff folks there in New England. That was inconceivable for them. It was, for many of them, below the dignity. And some now it is respectable. It appears on stage, and they go, and guess what? They loved it. Largely Copland's contribution. He wrote another wonderful work remember this was the 1920s. What great means of communication entertainment appeared around 1920s? Most of you were not born at that time.
Radio.
Other than that, in addition.
Well, movies.
Talking pictures, yes. And Copland immediately got ready to, many other American composers. Movie music was one, or music for the movies, let's say. Music for the theater first, then music for the movies became a very important contribution to the American scene. I will not talk separately about music for the movies, but I will mention it here because it is very, very important. Now, Copland was asked to write the music for the movie version of Our Town. Most of you have seen it, some of you may have acted in it in school plays. You know, it's a well-known play by Thornton Wilder, or do you pronounce him Wilder?
Wilder.
Wilder. It gets wilder all the time. About the turn of the century in New England village. He wrote something that you may have heard at least on radio, but you may have seen it. A Lincoln portrait? Yes, have you? For a speaker and orchestra, and usually the wonderful custom is to have a black taking the speaking part. It's very passionate. I have seen it on stage once, and usually when it's on radio in our classic radio station in Seattle, I love to listen to it. And he also wrote music for a fine song cycle to texts by Emily Dickinson, the 19th century American poet from Amherst, Massachusetts. Some of these songs include echoes of old American hymns. So here again, a very American composer and throwing himself full-hearted into the new age, the rapid developing American cultural environment, making much faster and much bigger paces than the European counterpart. He also was very interested in American folklore, and he wrote a a book of songs of old American ballads or poetry. And I will play two of them. The first one is called Simple Gifts. And this, as you know, is a popular hymn by of and through whom? The Shaker said, it dates from the period 1837 to 47, pretty much 100 years before Copeland was born. You, of course, know all about the Shakers. They were an extremist religious sect, and they were founded in the mid-18th century with their own culture. Copeland brought in music from the Shakers, and I don't know how much music, but at least this one song, which became immediately and still is one of the very well-known songs. It was also published as under a different title. Do you know which one? The Lord of the Dance. You may have heard the title, or you may have heard it through these words. And Copeland took the song and made it famous in another major work, which is called Appalachian Spring. One of his most beautiful works. I was even prepared to bring some here, but we don't have time. Appalachian Spring is a ballet about Pennsylvania in the early 1800s. See how the roots in American history provide wonderful, extraordinary material to American composers, and this is so heartwarming. So let's play this. All these little selections are very short, around 2 minutes. It's 1 minute 52 seconds, so please don't get too impatient. This is track number 4, Simple Gifts. Again, Copeland also had a sense of humor, and by visiting Oklahoma, he found this funny text as a nonsense song. He found Oklahoma, I'm talking about the state, not the musical, and it is called I Bought Me a Cat, another 2 minute event, track number 5. I want to show you different sides of composers so you know how enormously versatile they were. So. The introduction to by Aaron Copland will never forget it. I will skip over one more composition of Copland because we simply don't have time. We have two or three more composers I have to get you in touch with. You may not believe this, but you hear next, but I will play your composition by Leo Y. Anderson. No compilation of American music would be complete without the music of Leroy Anderson. You may think he is dated, but he has a very important influence and made American music famous around the world. Leroy Anderson was a famed composer and conductor, a gifted arranger and orchestrator, and nowadays his compositions are considered somewhat dated, as I said, but they were tremendously popular during many decades, and had a solid following not just in this country, but over the entire world, where they were considered representative of American popular music. And this is one of the main reasons that I want you to hear at least one little piece of him. How many people are familiar with music by Leroy Anderson? Well, you have a surprise coming. After graduating from the prestigious Harvard School of Music, remember how many composers we had who were self-taught. He heard it all from the host's mouth. He entered into a long-lasting professional partnership and private friendship with the legendary Arthur Fiedler, the famous conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra. Anderson's compositions had a rather modern structure for his time. He was born in 1908, and as I told you before, mildly composed. They were popular symphonic pieces written strictly for entertainment, and arranged with a particular love of sound gags. Now, I am probably very unorthodox in my love for music, and I love popular music, entertainment music, as much as I love classical music. They have all a place in my heart and discourse, especially for American music. He was a man full of imagination who had new gags and new funny and sophisticated effects ready for every new composition. It is amazing how he managed to closely link every single gag to the composition that had been invented for. Inseparable from it and unthinkable without it. I have several compositions. I cannot play them because of lack of time, but I will mention them to you. Maybe you get curious enough and go to your local library and ask for his recordings. Listen to the noise of the clock in the drama sequence in the syncopated clock. You may have heard it. This I would have done if we didn't have the CD player. I told him, I threatened him here, if you don't bring the CD player, I sing all the music. So, no, Hans, don't do it. We get one for it. Or consider the hammering of a hectically used typewriter and the piece called the typewriter. And then you try this with a Pentium word processor and Microsoft Windows 95. Then this famous sandpaper ballet. You can hear the sound effect, which refers clearly to the traditional American shoe dance. Some of you may have even danced there, that comes alive again in Anderson's composition. And one of Anderson's biggest successes was Blue Tango, best known work. And I will play this for you. It is a charming combination of South American rhythms. You see, we are expanding beyond the political confines of the United States. And black spirituals. The mixture of blues and jazz is still today received as an unusual and colorful and very vital sound. And this was a gentle and painless introduction of the world to American jazz. This is why I will present it to you. Never and nowhere does Anderson's music become pretentious. Leroy Anderson's music has charm and esprit. He himself was an enfant terrible with a first class education. His works are still being performed today and belong to the standard repertoire of many orchestras, including the Boston Pops and the John Williams. Is John Williams still conductor? I think so. And the Cincinnati Pops and the Erich Kunzel. You've heard of Spike Jonze?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
America's well-known musical comedian. He once said about Leroy Anderson, if it wasn't for him, it would have been my task to invent his music. That clever guy has saved me from a lot of work. My intent of presenting this is to alert you to, again, the enormous variety and richness of our American music heritage, and do not ignore it, listen to it. It is fun, it is wonderful, and with an open mind, you can learn an enormous amount about it. Okay? Promise? All right. Let's see the Tango. One last little over 2 minutes. If you feel blue and want to dance around. Thank you. Will be two more composers to go. The next piece will be in a more serious vein. I'm trying to not only teach you but also entertain you. And variety is one of the most important qualities or properties of good music. So this time I will play a piece that lasts a little bit longer, but then, no. Close to 10 minutes. Are you willing to listen?
Oh,
yeah. Okay. This is a composition by Samuel Barber, a very American composer, and this is Samuel Barber's best-known work. It is deeply romantic, intensely emotional, and of a stark beauty. It is the most frequently performed American concert piece written in a century. Not only here in this country, but worldwide. 5 years after Barber's death, this work became an elegy for an entire generation of Americans. You know how and why? And filmmaker Oliver Stone featured it in Platoon, which was about
Vietnam War.
That is the reason I want to listen to it in its entirety. There is nothing gained, or very little gained, by just listening to an extract. So what do? You hear a strand of melody, and maybe you even say, well, this is too depressing, I don't want to hear the rest. But I do want you to hear it because, remember, the entire idea of my presentation is to bring the events in the world, not just here in this country, but I will, into the realm of American music, and probably few events in American history have cut so deeply into the emotions and had so many tragic consequences as the Vietnam War. Whether you actually saw that movie or not, I would like you to listen to this music with your eyes tightly closed to exclude any outside distractions and experience its emotional impact on you throughout its about 10-minute duration, and afterwards share your impressions with all of us. Many people hear it for the first time, and they said, oh boy, this is not something that I want to spend time with. But I have you here as my semi-captive audience, and I want to do this experiment. Samuel Barber, Adagio for Strings. It is very, of very rich emotional content, and I am just very interested in your comments and your discoveries that you are making, but you must concentrate on music. Do not let get yourself distracted by it. This is perhaps the highlight of my presentation. Thank you. How does this music impress you? I'm interested in negative as well as positive statements.
There's an awful lot going on in there. There's the primary two, but there was a lot of undercurrent going off in different directions. That was pretty complicated.
Yes, it is. This is very complex music.
It's intense.
Very intense.
Has an underlying sense of optimism.
The underlying theme?
Underlying theme of optimism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is it is composed in a very systematic manner, by the way. And you should know, I don't know whether this means anything to you, it was composed in 1936 when Barber was only 26 years old. Mm-hmm. Does it sound like a composition of a young man?
No.
This sounds like could have been written by the late Richard Wagner. But I think this music is much more emotional, even as the most tense passages from his operas. But I don't want to express my opinions. I would like to hear from you. How did this music touch you? Was it difficult to keep your attention on it for 10 minutes?
No.
I will tell you, when I heard it first, I couldn't stand it. I turned it off after 3 minutes and walked out because it overwhelmed me. I said, I cannot handle it. And I was wondering whether any of you have a similar reaction. And then I told myself, no, you cannot do that. You have to find out what's going on. And then I began to understand music better. But my opinion here is not important. I would like to hear how this affects you. First of all, how many of you have heard this music before? Then you probably heard it in a movie. But movies are very distracting and you don't pay so much attention as this background. But when you hear it by itself in a quiet environment, is it here? Someone?
Yeah, I heard it first in a concert hall and I was very moved by it then. And I don't remember what I thought then, but hearing it today, I don't hear optimism. I hear beseeching, which builds to that wonderful climax. And then, but yet at the end, it's an acceptance of whatever the experience is. You know, you're beseeching, get me out of it, whatever, but you're accepting at the end that this is what it is.
You hit, as far as I'm concerned, I've never read an interpretation of music, but you hit the nail right on the head, because this is the way I feel it. This continuous striving for more and more tension eventually comes to climax and then a kind of resignation. Now, before I say anything else, Deborah or someone else who would comment?
I just think it's too beautiful to be depressing. It's just gorgeous. And to me, there was an element of discovery in it. Every time you get to a point of tension, but there's something that pulls you out of it. There's something. I was thinking of hiking here. It wouldn't be great hiking music because it's so intense, but it's almost like going somewhere where you don't know what's around the next corner. Yeah. And there's kind of tentative about it. But I just think it's too beautiful to be.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you bring this out because I have played this music before in class and people said I would rather not come to your classes anymore when you play music like this. Many people reject things that are sad or I don't even think this music is sad. To me it's not depressing, but I had to get used to it. And the more often I hear it, the more I discover it. So it is very abstract music. That means you can imagine anything you wish and fit it in there. But the best way for me to listen to it is just let yourself go. Don't make an effort that, okay, what does this mean? What am I supposed to imagine with this passage? But I would like to hear some more comments before I say something else.
Just kind of let the beauty wash over you.
Wash over you.
Let the beauty wash over you.
Yeah, that's the beauty. Wash over you. Yeah, deliver yourself. Let's swim with the current and just don't make an effort to get out of it. Very appropriate, yes.
Well, I followed directions and I closed my eyes, and so I will have to hear it again sometime. Because had I been hitting and which appears to be a distraction to someone else, I would have been able to hear and appreciate it. But I thought, no, I should try it the way it's supposed to be done. But I missed it all.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sorry, I should have told you. Close your eyes, but continue knitting.
Closing the eyes is the bad part.
Yeah. You know, I just didn't want you to get distracted, because if you, and nobody would listen to this as a background music, because it bothers them. It has a music that you have to emotionally experience. Yes, sir?
Well, I think someone else mentioned the complexity of what's going on inside the piece, which I agree with, but I think the real genius of the piece really is the simplicity of the materials that he starts with, because it's nothing but, you know, in musical terms, it's just a series of ascending scales, a few notes each, you know, da 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 da.
Yes.
And he pings it around and he layers them on top of each other. But I mean, when it comes right down to it, the actual theme is about as simple as you can get, just notes going up.
Exactly. It's very, very appropriate, very correct. One or two more quick comments.
This
idea. Oh, I'm sorry.
I had a hard time not visualizing things, and I had seen the movie, and so I first saw the soldiers going through the fields, and I tried to find different images to fit to it, and I thought of Jesus on the cross, and I thought of Holocaust pictures, mm-hmm. And I guess what it did for me was it's those kind of things that we can't put words to.
Mm-hmm.
But it expresses those emotions or those, that struggle in those things that we just can't put words to.
Mm-hmm.
And that climb, the word was climbing and you're climbing and you think it's going to resolve, and it never does. I mean, and then that sense of, I think someone said a resolution, or not one of the words you used.
Resignation.
There is no, I didn't find any optimism in it. It was just,
no.
But this is, you just have to kind of sigh and say,
mm-hmm.
This is it.
It was so much better than words, because mm-hmm. words fail those things so miserably.
But don't you feel it also has a calming influence?
Mm-hmm. Well, only in a sense of resignation.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's calming.
Yeah. Yeah. I changed my mind after hearing it repeatedly, and I, in the beginning, thought there was a lot of resignation, but I came to the conclusion by getting better acquainted with it, that it's... it may be acceptance of a status quo or facts. It does not contain a fight in it. This is resistance. It is a mm-hmm. let yourself go. And I find it incredibly calming. It's interesting to read reactions from the public all over the world. This is not without reason. I thought it was absurd when I first heard it, that this music was so... powerfully accepted in countries other than the United States. And maybe this is not typically American, but this is already on an international basis. But it was written by a very American composer who was strongly influenced by... And I wouldn't have been surprised if this had been written at the end of the Vietnam War.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think the filmmaker, Oliver Stone, did a marvelous job in using this music very, very appropriately. But there were, what, how many years? 30, 40 years in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did there someone else? Yeah?
Sure. Well, I just thought maybe I have a small anecdote that I could share about the piece from something that I've read.
Please do.
You haven't mentioned it, but I seem to recall that Barber originally wrote this as the slow movement of a string quartet.
Yes, it
that
is.
He wrote. And then he later arranged it for strings. And a story
yeah.
that I read once in the memoirs of a Russian violinist who was
yeah.
playing in a string quartet.
Uh-huh.
This is back in the probably the 40s or 50s.
Uh-huh.
And he told the story of the quartet he was in played the Barber string quartet
uh-huh.
at a concert, I think somewhere in the Ukraine or something. And he said that after the concert, he was approached backstage by an elderly, I think he said an elderly Ukrainian Jew,
yeah.
who was just in tears and
yeah.
said that, I've never heard this wonderful music before, but that for him that it expressed everything that he had, and this is after World War II, that it expressed everything that he felt, that the lament of the Jewish people
uh-huh.
after that, you know, towards their god, and after the, you know, all of the events of the war and the Holocaust that it, and even in Russia too, and that he found that he had never heard anything like the particular music that expressed everything for him.
This is a very interesting comment, and I, in my experience, I have I do not know of any composer whose music approaches that particular string. Not all of Barber's music. This is one movement out of four, I believe, in the string quartet. But what's the name? Messiaen, a French composer, who was an inmate in a concentration camp, wrote music that is gripping in a similar manner. But then again, it is on a completely different basis. And you can take this or leave it. I have had some of my students told me this is the one and only time I ever want to listen to something like this. This is up to them. The majority thought that my repeated hearing brings out the beauty. And this, we cannot, if we don't agree with a piece of music, we can just leave it. We don't have to live with it. But I think the majority of people I've talked to think this is absolute beauty. This is not tainted by any external events. Anyway, Barber is the next to last composer. And now, to get you out here in a more positive mood, I will introduce Leonard Bernstein, or he's already there. About whom I... Leonard Bernstein was a bright-eyed American wunderkind who, like Peter Pan, seemed to stay young while everyone else around him grew old. He was everything: a talented pianist, a brilliant conductor, a composer of intermittent genius. He had times where he was completely blown out and couldn't produce, but his music he did produce is wonderful. He was a writer, a teacher, educator, an activist, and an intellectual icon. Possibly one, certainly among the most important and influential personalities in American music, and in bringing the European classical music to the masses with his lectures, teaching on the radio and teaching on television, and at university, especially his Harvard lectures that have been published. What I want to finish my presentation is the beginning of a, what should I call it? It is a symphonic suite based on his great work written for the theater and eventually put into movie, West Side Story. And what is this?
35 minutes till to start. Yes. The bus is coming up from Lucerne and 35 minutes the parade.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
This is the last piece. It will be fast. It is the prologue to this to his West Side Story, and it is a I will stop, I will interrupt it at a given point, and it's, it gives you an idea again how an American composer utilized all and every development that all the previous composers have brought to him, and he is just one exponent. There are not dozens, but hundreds of American composers who, during the century, have been writing and still are writing and will write in the future American music, and we are rapidly enriching our repertoire in an incredible way. So this is a short thing, track number 5. Thank you. As you probably all know, the West Side Story is a musical. It was a theatrical masterpiece, and it is a modern-day big city adaptation of the Romeo and Juliet story. And this concludes my presentation. I just want to say a few final words. Just hope you enjoyed my selections of the compositions we listened to and my comments about the composers' times and lives, which is very important in this context. It is my profound desire that you will go home enriched and proud of our national musical heritage. And this modest presentation of mine will be the beginning or continuation for all of you of a beautiful and long-lasting relationship between yourselves and the music of America. And I want to thank you.